Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Be Customer Led. I'm here with a very special guest. Jason Womack is actually one of the reasons why this podcast has started. I am both nervous and excited to have you on the show. Here's a guy, folks, that leads from his heart. He shares from his mind and he trusts with his gut. He believes that when you're at your best, everything gets better. And he's got two books out that he's written. So he's an author. He leads workshops. He has coached individual leaders to be more focused on productivity, inclusion, and collaboration. He's known as JW. So for those of you who know him, and hopefully you know him now through this podcast if you've never met him or don't know his work, he's known as JW in his life and his work. He shares practical methods all day long that you can use to maximize your time, direct your focus, and achieve greater success. JW, thanks for being on the show. It's so great to see you again after so many years.
It has been too long. In fact, our paths of crossing in New York City, of course, this is going to be the first year in 20 years. It looks like I will not visit your town. And, you know, there was a time there where it was 8 to 12 times a year that I got to travel from California to New York.
Yeah.
And then that all shifted. Well, it first started shifting about a year and a half ago when I took up a project working with the government. I'm now based in Montgomery, Alabama.
All right.
I work at a university here, and I've spent the past 18 months looking at the human domain of the leader's experience. And so we'll probably we'll dance around that a little bit today.
For sure.
Thank you for doing this, first of all. I saw one of your emails, and yes, I think there's 7 billion people on the planet. I think there's just shy of 7 billion podcasters out there.
900,000.
So the fact that you are putting your mind and heart where your mouth is, I think, is a big deal. And then look at the name of your podcast, Be Customer Led. We can say all day long that the customer is always right. The customer is the forefront. But look, my mom taught me, Bill, it takes two to tango. And so where do we meet on the dance floor?
That's
so,
right.
Totally looking forward to today.
So cool. Me too. So you've got a pretty amazing and special journey. Can you just, and you can go back as far back as you'd like, but like, tell us how you got to where you are today, the great work that you've been doing, helping and coaching people become better leaders, better people, frankly, in their day to day. Like, what got you here? What got you to start there maybe? And then we'll go from there.
You know, Steve Jobs put it in words that most people heard when he did his Stanford talk. The dots don't make sense looking forward. I can't believe that I could make a 60-month plan right now. But boy, do they make sense looking backwards. So I won't go to the, well, I was born in a small town. So I grew up in a small town. How's that?
Yeah.
My junior high, elementary and junior high were spent in a little town called Lagunitas, California, which now everybody knows as a beer, which was fascinating because when I was there, I mean, look, my eighth grade graduating class was 16 students.
Wow.
I didn't have neighbors. Our home didn't have heat. We didn't have TV till I was 8. I could go on and on. Looking back at the time, I go, wow, I was really, we didn't have a lot. Mm-hmm. But you know what we did have was we had curiosity, and we had what I was taught very early on, which is if I said I was bored, I just got put to work. So I figured out very early in my life how not to be bored. And it was auto-generative. It's self-generative. I look around at people today and we're still, even in the world of COVID, we are still in a world where people think that FaceTime is important. They still think that being at work, whatever that means to you today, we still think that I need to be somewhere in case something happens. I say scratch it and rewrite the narrative. Be somewhere so that something happens. Mm-hmm. So if I look around, if there's margin in my day, I mean, look at finance is built on margin. If I have margin, I have opportunity. If I have margin, I have possibility. So one of the things that drives me, Bill, is I create margin, relationship margin, financial margin, health margin. Where can I build just a little bit extra? And then here's the thing that separates me from a lot of folks. I will always wonder at the end of the day, how could I have been better? How could it have been better? How could that person have been better? Now, what this looks like to the immature eye is, oh, he's never satisfied. And I used to try to bounce around and placate. And now I'm just getting old, but I say, Bill, I'm not. Because if tomorrow I'm not a better version of what I was yesterday, then what am I doing with my life?
Absolutely. 100%. So we tell our kids this all the time. Whenever we hear one of our kids say, I'm bored, our response is only boring people are bored.
Ooh, yeah.
And so, and I love the concept of building margin. That's just genius. I am going to steal that if that's okay.
Take it. Take it.
So awesome. So you do a lot of work on leader, and I want to talk about sort of your university experience a little bit too, but you're doing a lot of work on leadership. You've dedicated a lot of your career, your professional career on the topic. How are great leaders created? You've met probably tens of thousands of them. And why do we need leaders, right? You think about Zappos, who doesn't have management or leaders in the organization. They do pretty well. Why do we need leaders as well?
All right. So there's three things on my mind. So what do leaders do that's different? Do we need those kinds of folks? And then where are there examples of leaderless leadership going on? Which is an interesting concept. So out of the gate, look at anybody listening to this, you might want to stop the podcast now, grab a piece of paper and write those three prompts down, because I'm very curious about your leader philosophy. And you can send this to me, Bill. We'll give him my contact
information
at the end. And notice I said leader philosophy, not leadership philosophy. Yep. I don't want to know what you would do. I want to know why you do what you do do. Not why you do what you do, but I want to know why from your past you respond the way you do.
Yeah. Okay.
So why don't we fast forward from grammar school and junior high, blah, blah, blah. I got to college in the 90s and it was, they said, you need to pick a major. It's like, oh man, because I liked following people at the time, like Leonardo da Vinci. I really liked following people at that time, like Oprah Winfrey. I really liked following people at the time, like Albert Einstein. Now, each one of those fundamentally different. However, curiosity drove them. So I'll get those three things out of the way. I majored in Spanish language. Then I got my bachelor's degrees in Spanish literature and U.S. history. Then I got a master's degree in education. Now you look at that and you go, well, wait a minute, that's a lot of stuff. Essentially, I wanted to know two things. Number one, I wanted to know more about the world. If I speak a second language, third language, anybody out there listening, raise your hand if you speak a separate language. Some people just raise their hand. We look at the world differently.
Yeah, we do.
We have this superpower inside of us that only comes out because we can be cognitively diverse. We can be slower a little bit in our thinking. I can imagine myself walking down the park of Chapultepec and I can wonder what it was like that day.
Yeah.
That's different. And then as far as education, so that one was all about communication. How do I communicate in the world?
Yeah.
And then with education, specifically, Bill, I studied how to teach history, but really what I studied was how do I change minds? Mm-hmm. How do I influence thinking? How do I scaffold what I did know to what I do know to what I need to know? So when I think of a leader's role, I use this analogy recently, it's been working. So my job as a leader is to create this space to build a fire. and maybe even kindle it. Mm-hmm. Then I need to raise the flag and say, hey, we need some wood. But here's the deal. You're going to show up with a piece of mahogany. Jody's going to bring a piece of pine. Someone else mm-hmm. is going to bring an oak. Someone else is going to bring something that's saltwater laden from the beach. And someone's yeah. going to bring something from 10,000 feet in the mountains. Your jobs around are to build the fire. At that moment, the leader gets to walk away. People gathered around. And then here's where it gets interesting to me. How long have humans gathered around flickering lights toward yeah. the end of days and told stories of survival? As far as I can tell, forever, yeah. at least as long as humans have been alive. Here's the problem. Today, we're not gathering around the fires that we've built to tell stories of survival. We're being fed their stories mm-hmm. of survival.
Yeah.
So leaders out there, here's my challenge to you. Get your people. Get your peers, get your managers, your leaders to tell their stories of survival. Help those people connect their own dots, because someone who's surviving can thrive. Mm-hmm. Someone who's building can really show up.
Very cool. And where like a company like Zappos, where there's leaderless, right? Environments, right? Is it just exhibiting the fire, or someone having the ability to say, I'm going to just stoke something here for a little bit and see if ideas can generate. We need wood for this to build more. Do they automatically just say, hey, can you go, Johnny or Sally, can you guys go get some wood so we can kind of build on this a little bit? And whatever that is from in a business context, right? I think about my work today, right? In the CX space, it's looking at like a piece of data or information around a customer and saying, well, that looks pretty interesting. What do you think that is? And then we pull sort of the yarn on that sweater until there's no yarn left. And all of a sudden you've kind of created that story as you keep digging and going further. Is that leadership to you? Does that come close to what we've been talking about? I'm curious.
What do I look at? We are, let's bring social cognitive theory into the mix, right? If you haven't read anything by Bandura, please go just do an internet Google. Go to a scholar, Google Scholar, type in Bandura and look up social cognitive theory. Here's the deal. We model toward what we've seen. Some people see it in their mind before mm-hmm. they've ever seen it physically. Yep. Yeah. Some people need to see it physically before they can see it in their minds. So the positionality now of a leader, and we probably need to talk about bias and implicit and unconscious bias at some point if we're going to address this. Tony Shea at Zappos, Tony mm-hmm. had to say to his buddies that day in his apartment, I want to buy a pair of boots. I can't find them online. I'm going to go buy a bunch of them and put them online. He had no idea what he was going to have experienced. And I can probably say the same thing for all of the greats. Mm-hmm. They had and here's where people are going to argue with me, right? Is necessity the mother of invention? what I do know is a want can light a fire if it's given at the right time, in the right place, with person with the right mindset. How is it that some days I could be struck with information and I might not see it? I filter it. Something yeah. is getting in
yeah.
the way.
Yeah.
Here's the fun one that I'll do this really fast, like 45 seconds or less. I hear a lot right now in the COVID era, how people are starved for connection, starved. I want to just be with people. I want to go to the bar. I want to
yeah, that's right.
Look, back in the old days, like 2019 and before. Bill, how many times did you and I sit on an airplane for 4, 5, 6, 7 hours? We could fly to London, touching the person sitting.
Yeah, that's right.
Touching the person sitting next to us, didn't say a word.
Didn't say a word. Didn't even look at you, right?
And so, look at folks. I love you out there listening to this. Don't kid yourselves. Okay, this is hard work. I'm keeping this safe for work.
It's all good. It's all good.
This is hard work. Leading, leader, lead, leadership. All of those are things mean that you have seen it in your mind before mm-hmm. someone else has seen it physically, or you have seen it physically and now you need to translate. Either way, your job is not, gosh, I don't want to put myself in a corner. I don't know if my job is as much to lead as it is to influence. And I don't even know if I can influence unless I can communicate. So the reason I wrote books, the reason why I write a Sunday note, when I moved to Alabama in 2019, I wrote a note, an email on Sunday. I sent it to my friends and family, like 18 people, right? Hey, I'm still fine. The South, it's okay. At any rate, I did one for the next three Sundays, Bill. And then for whatever reason, I didn't do one. That Monday morning, eight people emailed me. Hey, where's the Sunday note?
That's awesome.
Okay, I'll be very transparent with you. Jody and I ran a business for 12 years. I did newsletters. I did Constant Contact. Yeah. I did everything I could to try to get people to want to read my stuff. And it wasn't until I started speaking from my heart. It wasn't until I started sharing, hey, I walked down Dexter Avenue today and I stopped in front of the church that Martin Luther King spoke at before he went to Washington to give his eye to have a job. Yeah. And I started sharing with people, communicating, and that influenced. And by the way, look at leaders out there. The moment you start influencing, you start separating. And that's the I think that's the hardest part about what we're in right now. How many times have you and I in the past 2 months, 1 month, and I'm putting you on the spot here, but how many times have you drafted something on one of your socials, read it again and said, dang it, man, I don't know if my community is ready for that. Or I don't know if I'm ready for the community to see that immature thought.
Or not even written it down, just in my head, like, man, I should really write something about this. Not even COVID, just getting everything going around us, right? Just from a Black Lives Matter examples, like all of it.
All of it.
How many times, like, there's got to be half a dozen, if not more times where I'm like, I need to post something. I need to put something out there and put my, you know, just put my brain out there a little bit. Never did it. Never even got to writing.
And this is our work. Yeah. Leaders. This is our work. I just read a book recently. A buddy of mine, Patrick Gentempo, wrote a book called Your Stand is Your Brand. And we've heard it for years, right? So what's the hill you're going to die on? So I don't want to die, but you know what I mean?
I know what you're saying.
I want people to look at me, and this is what you got from the book, Get Momentum. I want people to look at me and go, he's the guy who, he's the guy that, and by the way, one's a noun and one's a verb, right?
Yeah. But still, so, like, that's a legacy, right? I mean, that's a pretty cool.
I call it the small L legacy. Look at Stephen Covey. He handled the big L legacy when he did To Live, To Laugh, To Love, and To Leave a Legacy. I want that. And yes, I want to know what your dash is. And I want to know why you're on the planet. That's Stephen Covey. When I come in, if you and I get to spend some time together, I am going to say, hey, look it. We're going to look at your calendar and we're going to make a mind map of your roles. And so I invite everybody to do this right now. Cool. Open up a piece of paper, you put your name or initials or go by in the middle of that thing. And then I want 5-7 spokes, like a wheel has spokes that holds the tire on. And then each role gets a line. I am a husband. I am an author. I am an instructor. I am a son. I am an athlete. Yeah. I am a researcher. Well, the first thing I do is I give myself some subjective objective rating scale. Right? 1 to 10. How am I doing as a husband? 1 to 10. How am I doing as a son? Now I say it's subjective, objective. It's subjective because I'm making up a number. It's objective because I wrote it down.
Yeah.
But at least I have something that now I can measure. Hey, here's that date. Let me look at this again in 90 days. I should see different numbers. Now that's going to rock a few people's worlds, right? Well, don't you want all the numbers to go up? No.
Not necessarily. You can't be great at everything.
All the time.
Yeah.
But what I can do is I can get the moving average I can get the every 3 months. And that's about how long I would suggest going in between. Yeah. Half a year is too much. You're going to lose a relationship. Yeah. Every month, you're just going to hold yourself under the microscope. Yeah. But here's the deal. Let's combine a couple of things. I ask people, what do you want to be known for? Not on the planet, not in your life. Over the next 3 months, as a fill in the blank, what do you want to be known for? Over the next 3 months, Bill, as a podcaster, what do you want to be known for? Because I can guarantee you, you're not going to say, I want to be known for getting all my podcasts out on time.
Yeah, no, that's not even close, right?
No.
Right.
So now leaders listening to this, as a fill in the blank, between now and fill in the blank, what do you want to be known for? We just got the news that Alabama is going to be opening up schools. Parents are going to have a choice. Yep. I mean, look, if someone sent me If you came to me and you said, "Hey, you know, I'm trying to make the decision. Do I send my kids back to school or not? Can you help me think that through?" I'll go, "Yeah, as a parent, over the next school year, what do you want to be known for?"
That's such an awesome question, and I love the finite time frame too, because there's immediate, like a lot of what you write and put out there, there's always this immediacy, and it's always time box to say, don't think of the 5-year kind of plan, like. What does the next 3 months look like for you? And you have the 30-30 rule, which is an awesome rule. Like, what are you doing now incrementally, creating margin to your point, right? Like, how do you continue to build on that?
Ready for this? Once I come up with an answer, even a rough draft, that's what I ask my folks to share. That's what I ask my folks, because the world is starving for connection. We fear connecting. We are one raise of a hand away from getting the help we need. Problem is, well, there's two problems with Americans. Number one, we don't like to ask for help. Number two, we want to offer help.
Yep.
Hold on a second.
Yep.
There's an error in the logic, and I'm not even a mathematician. People are begging to help you. You, who's listening to this, just need to frame the help you're looking for.
That's right.
So the title of the book, right, is Get Momentum, How to Start When You're Stuck. Yep. You come to me and you go, "Dude, I'm not stuck. I got everything lined up." I go, "Awesome. Done. Next."
No.
I want people who are stuck. Bill, I know you do.
I know you do. I want to get to that, because you've got it's a fantastic book. And I told you at the top of this, it's the reason why I started this, it actually helped me start the podcast. And I really mean that honestly. So as part of the book, I was kind of just going through the website, and this is going back, I don't know, 4 months ago, let's say. And when I was starting to think about, should I do this? Should I not? And I came across the book. I'm like, all right, great book. Learned a lot. I'm like, still stuck, still kind of working through now in my head. And then I came across the 20-page starter kit that you've got online. And I put I put the book down. I'm like, really good stuff. I need to go back to it. And then the starter kit, and it was like 20 pages, and it had like these awesome questions, all of it related to sort of the 5 stages of momentum, right? Motivate, mentor, milestones, monitor, and modify. And then I start answering all these questions for myself, getting to my why. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm not stuck. This is what I need to do. And the plan came together so fast. It was so cool. I got to tell you, like, it was so motivating. People should buy the book without a doubt, right? But like, if you can't afford like the Kindle $11, if you can't afford the $15 hardback, like not everybody can do that, right? I get that. The 20-page starter kit is actually free. I'm telling you, the help that that's going to give you get unstuck, it helped me get unstuck and actually do this thing. Can't speak highly enough about it. It was awesome.
Bill, if there's a way we can attach just a direct link to that, or if you want that PDF to send it out to your mailing list, here's the deal. You uncovered what I believe is the Pandora's box in a positive way, right? The gold in them nar hills. We need to ask ourselves questions. We need to answer the questions, yep. And we need to let ourselves actually consume and digest the answers.
Why is reflection so important to momentum? Now you talk about it. I've heard you kind of explain why, but like for those who are now just getting to know you, maybe why is reflection so important to getting momentum?
So about a year and a half ago, I noticed a spot in a mirror. No big deal. Whatever. Getting in my 40s. This happens. And then about a year ago, it's like, it's not going away. And then about 8-9 months ago, my sister said, "Hey, what's with that spot?" I said, I know. So 2 months ago, I had it checked out, did the biopsy thing. Mm-hmm. A week later, I get the call. "Mr. Womack, we took 2 biopsies, and the first one is non-cancerous, blah, 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 blah," which meant the second one, there was going to be different news. I'm not stupid. So squamous cell carcinoma, we need to get that taken out.
Okay.
Whoa. So she says, "Yeah, we'd like to make the appointment." I said, great. So I don't know about you, but if a doctor says, "Hey, we need to make an appointment," I open up my calendar because I'm going to do this, right? So I can manage it. And then I automatically went 3 months out because I figured, look at doctors, they're busy.
You're busy. You've got a lot going on, right?
And I said, and I'm looking at the calendar and I said, great. You know, when's an opening the doctor has? And the woman says, can you come on Friday, which is 3 days from now? I go, wow, that's really fast. I said, should I come in on Friday? They go, we think it's a good idea if you come in Friday. Your question, Bill, was why is reflection so important to leadership? If we don't look at ourselves in the mirror, if we don't pay attention to how we are perceived in the world, how we are showing up in the world, I tell people all the time, when you walk by a reflective surface, pause, because that's what they're looking at when they look at you. And you and I, we got to meet in a building there in downtown Manhattan a long time ago. You and I both know what it was like when those elevator doors opened up and you had to gird up, man, you know, and when someone asked, how are you? The answer was fine. Yep. When someone else asked, can you? The answer was, been waiting for you to ask, what is it? We grew up, Bill. And this is where it gets hard, because I'm going to ask people to take a look in the mirror, to take a look at their reflection, to take a look at the thoughts they have on paper. Writing slows me down. Typing slows me down. Listening to a recording of my voice slows me down. I'm trying to cover all the bases here.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be somebody out there that says, well, I don't want to write things down. I just read.
That's right.
Yeah. I go, fantastic. I'll give you three ways, right? You can write it. You can record the audio. You can type it. I'll give you a fourth. You can videotape yourself.
Yep.
But here's the deal. I need you to go back. All right. How many times have you and I, you've done this, you've listened to your podcast and you go, wow, that's how I sound.
Yeah, it's awful.
Don't see it.
That's right.
So why is reflection so important? Reflection is important because I cannot be the thinker and assumer tomorrow that I was yesterday. And there's no other way to do that than to question my own thinking.
Mm-hmm.
How I do that, how I do that is I ask myself and I answer questions. I am on the hunt for questions. Every day I'm looking for a new question.
I love it. I love it. And I love how you kind of just really in a nice structured way get people through in the book, right? Just getting people through to be reflective, to think about what the things they're going to do with immediately, just continuing to monitor that behavior and that progress, rewarding themselves through that cycle, right? It's so cool. You know, as I think about those five stages of momentum, when I read the book, the first thing that came to my mind is, how do I scale this? So how do I think that, how should I be thinking about momentum at a team level? And what does that look like? You know, you can call it a team or a tribe and everybody's got a cool little name for it now, right? But like, how do I scale momentum across this team and get them to a maturity where that performance level is just off the charts?
So I'm going to answer that.
And I've been thinking about that for months, by the way. I'm trying to be reflective and I'm trying to trying to do little different things on the team. Maybe other people who are listening to the podcast are also thinking the same thing. But for me, is like, how can momentum be scaled? I don't know if that's something you thought about. And if not, no worries. We can come back to it another time, hopefully. But
I'm curious what you think. I wouldn't have gone through partnering with John Wiley and Sons just across the river in Hoboken to put a book into hardback if we wanted 14 people to get after this thing, right? So for anyone out there who has ever said writing a book is hard, writing the book is its own challenge, and then getting the right people to read it is yet another one.
Yep.
So there's a couple of things, and I'm going to be conscious of time because for everybody listening to this, please email Bill, email me. We love to continue this conversation, but for the sake of the podcast today, let's for a moment talk about culture at work. This is a thing that we are going to be talking about even more in the next few months based on what's happened over the past few months. Yep. We've always been talking about culture. You line up 8 consultants on workplace culture, you'll get 3 different definitions, 7 levels deep. Yeah. But here's the deal. Your attitudes and beliefs about what your people can and will do are driving what your people can and will do. So do I believe that people who work around me are stuck? Is that a negative? Mm-hmm. Do I discount certain people because of our personality conflict? So if I'm going to scale something, the very first thing that I need to do is I need to ask myself, where are my biases about whether or not said program can scale? And I'm telling you, we leaders, and I'm putting myself in a big bucket, we, with our vocabulary, can bring people closer or further away very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How many meetings have you been on in the past few months where someone said, well, if we were in person, I'm like, stop it. Because everything that you're about to say has now been unconsciously at best, consciously at worst, compromised. Down to the smallest little pieces. So instead of saying, hey, gang, I have a feeling that we're kind of stuck on this. Hey, gang, I think that there's a couple of you out there have ideas that we haven't heard yet. Okay, how does this scale? The tool that I will give you is listen. Now, listen may or may not be actually hearing someone's voice. For me, listening is a total body experience. I'm listening with my eyes. I am listening with my feelings. I am listening with my intuition. I am listening to yesterday's conversation today, going back, what did I miss? Now you're going to ask, everyone's going to ask, well, how do I do that? How do I scale this? There are two of the five questions I think scale very quickly. Two of the five questions I think scale very quickly. The first one is, what do you want to be known for?
Mm-hmm.
Now, remember, the way we frame that question is not completely and totally. I don't even want to know, as an employee while you're working here, what do you want to be known for? Because even that's too big or scary for some people. How about this? What if that leader brought to the team a project they were working on, a client they were serving, an initiative they were going after, a deal they were trying to get? And what if every single person on the team, and I don't care if there's 550 or 500, I'll go buy 500 3x5 note cards. I'll pass them out on their way into the building or on their way out of the whatever it is. Hey, everybody, about this project, I need your name on one side. On the back side, you've got 10 lines. I need 8 words per line. On this project, what do you want to be known for?
So,
and then I would collect of the 500, I'm going to get 150 to 400 that fill something out. But here's the deal, Bill. We're not going to have 400 different iterations. You know what you're honestly going to have? 22. And there just became my 22 Tiger teams. That now I can say, great, in teams, I want you to meet. And then next week, I want you to flip up, send one representative from each team, and we're going to have a meeting with 22, 21 different mindsets. So how does this scale? We have to find ways to listen. I'm doing a lot of programs on Zoom these days because that's the world we're in. What I do in the middle of it is I send them a link in the chat to a Google form that I will not continue the program until I get 80% participation. And what 80% participation means is I get at least 80% of the people to type a line. I bring that up, Bill, in real time, and I show the audience, hey, I have 100 of you, 80 of you just responded to this thing. I take their words, I dump it into a word cloud. I bring that up and I go, that's what we're going to talk about. That's how I listen. That's how I scale. So for those of you out there, if you're looking to get a team of diverse peoples, which you absolutely need, now I need to hear that diversity from the extroverts to the introverts, from the high D's to the low D's, from the blues to the greens. I'm just trying to go through all the personality.
Whatever the wheels are, you know, that everyone's gone through all of them, right?
Let me do the second question really fast, because this is going to be important for those of you who want to scale this stuff. It's all about knowing my people. That's my job. My job as a leader is to know the strengths, the weaknesses. It's to know the interests. It's to know my people. If at the end of the day, you have not learned at least one thing about at least one person on your team that you didn't know the day before, fail. You know, look, I'm 5'4", but I can run fast. And if you think that I'm wrong and you try and chase me, I'm going to outrun you. If you don't know more today than you did yesterday about one, at least one person on your team, you're failing. Why? Because if I know people on my team, I can help them answer this second question. Whom can I learn from? Now, we want to backfill that answer. You and I, we have that shared experience at that one company. Yeah. They did a big job between sponsor and mentor, sponsor and mentor. Should we assign a sponsor? Should we assign a mentor? So what I wanted to do is I wanted to break the mold on the definition. To me, I just have people I learn from. Mm-hmm. Now, I can learn from dead people. I can learn from people I'll never meet. And yeah, there are some people that are in my phone that I can text or call and they'll reply or pick up.
Yep.
But I don't know who to reach out to. I don't know what biography to read. I don't know which TED Talk to watch if I don't know what I want to be known for. Those of you who mentor, so mentor, your one job is to not talk to your mentee until she or he has clarified what they want to be known for in a specific role in a specific time period. Otherwise, you're wasting both of your time.
It's a great point. How do you help them?
Mentor comes up. Hey, will you help me? Sure. What do you want to work on? I don't know. What should I do? Wrong. Here's a question I'll give you. What do you want to be known for? Well, I don't know why I'm on the planet. That's not what I asked. That's not what I asked.
Yeah.
So that's why people needed the tool. They needed the PDF or they needed, you know, and Wiley lets me give, I can give the first two chapters of the book away for free. That's the first 26 pages that you can just have as a PDF because I wanted people to have a lifeline. I wanted them to have the fruits of the work that Jody and I did to build the book, which were, we had to decide as consultants, that's what we were, as executive coaches, that's what I did. We had a distributed known for to the world where some people knew me as, oh, he's the guy that helped people organize their email. And then other people said, oh, he's the guy that comes to New York City to race in the NYC triathlon. And then some people go, he's the guy that made it through some rough patches in his marriage and held it together. See, each one of those was different. Mm. And so now all of a sudden we understand how the multiplex of a human experience is so wide. Mentors, ask your mentees to bring you the fruits of their thinking so you know how to help them. You know how to push them. You know how to encourage them.
I love the questions. And I think about that a lot. I think about those questions a lot, particularly because we're virtual now. And how do I influence virtually? Sometimes I'm not on video. I can't necessarily hear how the answer is coming through, right? Because it's really important to see someone over video and see how those answers are coming through sometimes. You're listening with your whole body, right? As you stated before, you're absorbing what they are doing physically, what they're communicating orally, et cetera. Hey, I watched one of your keynotes from a while back. You shared a story about your dad. You said he looked at himself in the mirror each day and asked himself, did I move the mission forward today? And if he answered the question yes, it was a reason to smile. And I loved the story. And it really touched me, actually. If he answered no, he would ask and answer the next question, which is, what can I do tomorrow morning to get back on track? So again, going back to that immediacy. So I know now where you get it from, right? Because he said, what can I do tomorrow morning? Not tomorrow, which is an 8 or 10 hour day for people, right? What can I do tomorrow morning? It feels like this thing of immediacy, like just start doing it tomorrow. Like set the time in the morning, wake up, get out of bed, brush your teeth, have breakfast, and get after it. It keeps, like, for me, like, I keep on hearing that a lot in the stuff that you write, the stuff that, whether it's a book, whether it's, you know, I hear in sort of the podcast that you produce, whether it's just the blog stuff that you write out. Why is that immediacy so important? Tomorrow morning, I'm doing this.
So I want to caveat everything I'm about to say, which is I've recently added a comma for now to a lot of this. And what it became was it became shorthand for, comma, until new information changes my mind in a positive or better way.
Yeah.
So the immediacy of it, forgive the cliche, but it just darned works. A bicycle is easier to sit on when it's moving than when it's still. So as a cyclist, I know that if I can start the bike moving, I can sit on it for a longer period of time. Now, I'm pretty good at a red light. I can balance, but I'm up out of my seat and I'm wiggling the front handlebars back and forth, and I cannot do that for very long. I think there are people, if anybody can see that image in your mind, just go, you know, drive up and down Fifth Avenue right now. There's less cars, so there's more cyclists.
There's a lot of space.
But when you watch a cyclist at a stop, they will pop out of their seat and the front handlebars will go back and forth. But here's what I can tell you right now. Metacognitively, they are not deep problem solving at that moment. They are at cognitive load. They have reached the pinnacle of what they can do and think about at that time. However, how many times have you and I been on a long walk, a long run, floating down a river, watching a movie at a beautiful restaurant? Yep. I'm just trying to find examples that we can all agree with, where out of nowhere, because we're so relaxed, because we're so present, because we're so engaged, whether by ourselves or with loved ones, out of nowhere, the answer to a question shows up. The solution to a problem shows up. I've been there too many times. Jody will come in when she can hear, because sometimes I yell at Microsoft Word if the sentences aren't doing what they're supposed to do. She will come in with my bike helmet and say, just go. Yeah. Because she knows that when I am out, I'm not going to say more times than not, enough times, I have come back with an answer. So your question, why is immediacy so important? Americans love immediate gratification. We want what we want. The problem is, as soon as we get it, we don't want it anymore. Just give a toy to a kid and I'll prove you right. The moment we achieve a goal that we worked toward, the moment that we're dating the person that we wanted to, the moment that we get the job that we want, Bill, come on, brother. You work in banking. You've heard it between the lines. People get a job and then they start looking for the next one.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's this idea that the immediacy is what actually auto-generates, self-generates the momentum. And momentum in the physics term, and to this day, I kind of wish that we would have done a little side paragraph, or I would have gotten a physicist to actually write the foreword, but it's under water under the bridge. Momentum to me simply means I am moving until further notice, at which time I'm going to change. Ran Very a business cool. for 12 years with my wife. And over that time, I started doing speeches at military bases. Then they started calling me more and more. Then a buddy of mine said, hey, we've got this university. It's our branch, service branch university. They're looking for an instructor of leadership in Montgomery, Alabama. I was living in Santa Barbara, California. On paper, you would look at that and go, there's no way the cat would do that. Somehow, some way, the universe heard why I'm on the planet. That's the big dash. That's my big L legacy. Yeah. And I tell people all the time, I have the dream job. Because every day I serve leaders who will lead. I serve servants who will serve. I serve operators who will operate. I serve people who want to be tomorrow a better version of themselves than they did yesterday. My invitation to every single one of you is to glance in the mirror, look at that woman, look at that man, and ask, hey, between now and 90 days, 180 days, how far out can you go? I'll ask you, how far out can you go? Go there. I posted something on Facebook today. I challenged 100 people on Facebook. I said, 3x5 note card, put the date 90 days from today. And I want one half of the note card to be about work and one half of the note card to be about life. And what do you see your experience being in 90 days from today? Because those words, that's where your attention lies. And then you want the big challenge. And here's what I modeled for my community is take a picture of it, post it on social.
I love that.
Because now people know where I'm going. And look, if I offend a couple of people, fantastic. All of a sudden, now I know who my customer is. And if I got some people to engage, awesome. Because now I know who my customer is.
Right on. Love that. Hey, this has been a great conversation. It's great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on the show. For those of you who have never read the book, go buy Get Momentum on Amazon or wherever you're buying your books. Go to your library if you want to. Download the 20-page starter kit that I did as well. Hey, so great to see you. I hope we see each other again soon. And give my best to Jenny too.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at becustomerled.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.